Hello and welcome to our podcast. My name is Mike and I'm here with my brother Dan.
Hello.
Who dislikes Sam Seaborn, the character on this show, does not dislike our real life brother Sam, who we often do podcasts with. Also, we're here talking about season one, episode 8 of The West Wing. This episode's called Enemies. Well, we're thrilled that you're with us. Hopefully you'll join us as we try and pull some big ideas off the small screen. This is Rerun Retrospect. All right, thank you again so much for joining us. We're here talking television. Excited to continue our watch through of season one of The West Wing. Hopefully you made yourself familiar with the episode. We've been enjoying this. Dan, still into the series as a whole?
Yeah, it's a good show.
Even after we just got done with an election here in the United States, it's not too much politics. Are you just tired of politics and all that kind of stuff that we're having to watch it, even though it's all over?
Right. I was thinking with the press briefings this episode in particular, but tired of seeing things run into real life in 2021. So yeah.
Right. Sure. To make things concise and make them flow, we break our podcast up into segments. Our first segment on this podcast is going to be State of the Union. That's where we do two things. We try and give a little nugget of something that was happening when the show was airing, either around the date or sometime around the day that it aired, just to give context to what was happening in the world. And then we also give a recap of the episode that we just saw. So, all right, Dan, do you have anything? I think this one aired on November 17th of 1999. You got anything interesting from that time?
Yeah, and I think it fits well with the show. The WB, remember that channel? Is that channel still around? I don't know.
I don't know. I think it's just an app now.
Maybe. I just remember the frog. And Dick Wolf, you know, who made Law and Order, made a lot of big television series. They had plans for a show called DC. First it was called DC Interns. Then they changed it to DC. And this same week they announced that they were canceling releasing that show, which to me seems like probably a big ripoff of this one. So I thought it'd be worth pointing that out. I mean,
well, now I'll be honest. If I'm not mistaken, the WB became the CW, so that network technically is still around, right? Isn't that correct?
That's probably. I'm sure they changed names.
Yeah. Sure. And then I don't think that there's a show on the CW that's not superhero centric, or am I wrong about that? Maybe that was the problem. None of the interns had superpowers, so they decided. They couldn't air it on. I'm just messing around. But okay, good stuff. One thing that I looked up around this time, the movie Being John Malkovich had been out since the end of October, but was really picking up steam here toward the end of November. They had really widened the release of it. I don't think that's the best John Malkovich movie. What's your favorite? Off the top of your head, first off, do you even like John Malkovich? I enjoy him as an actor. I think he does a great job.
Yeah, but I didn't know his name until Being John Malkovich came out.
So. Okay.
Which is no surprise that I don't know someone's name.
Well, there you go. There you go. So that's right. I mean, we all kind of eye-rolled when you said that. In fact, I'm trying to stall so you can Google John Malkovich and see a picture just to remind yourself and make sure.
Oh, he was also in The Line of Fire. He was the guy trying to kill the president in The Line of Fire.
Yeah. I mean, he does a great job playing creepy guy. Rounders is a great movie with Matt Damon.
Is that a... But yeah, it's a gambling movie, right?
Yes, he's the Russian kind of, he's kind of the antagonist, I would say, in that movie for Matt Damon. And then also the Man in the Iron Mask, he does a great job as one of the musketeers there.
That's such an underrated, I think that's an underrated movie.
Oh, I agree. I enjoy that very, very much. All right, so we're going to read the summary of the episode. We just take this straight off IMDb website. Let's hear what happened this week on the episode.
All right, this review is written by, or not review, this summary is written by Jackson Cornell. I hope I said that right. And he writes, a crucial banking bill is at risk when political rivals of environmentally sensitive President Bartlett attach a land use rider to it that would allow strip mining some of the Montana wilderness. CJ tries to stamp out rumors that the chief executive chastised the vice president during a cabinet meeting. And overworked Leo isn't too keen on his independent daughter Mallory dating the handsome Sam. CJ continues to fend off the romantic charms of a perceptive reporter with a knack for sniffing out juicy stories. Former lovers Mandy and Josh clash over the administration's attempt to jettison the land use rider that might also ruin passage of the more important banking bill.
It was. There were a lot of storylines. So we'll slide straight up. That was State of the Union. We'll move into our next segment, which is called The Filibuster, which is really, you know, the biggest part of our podcast where we actually talk about what we liked, what we didn't like about the episode. And the first thing I want to talk about, Dan, is just that kind of that opening scene. We kind of have what I felt like in the beginning was a throwaway scene of the president, you know, Josh wanting to go home and being extremely dramatic and the president really kind of messing with him about having all this trivia. This is a theme they've had, you know, all through the series as they've kind of launched this here in season one. It was a little labored for me, I guess.
A little forced, I'd agree. And you are sitting there going, okay, how does this man have this much energy? Because he must be, what, in his early 60s, late 50s,
right?
As far as this role. And there you have poor Josh, who's got to be back at the office in 4 hours, which I can identify with. I definitely finished some cross-country and track meets and, you know, got home at midnight and said, okay, I got to be up back at work in like 6 hours. This is miserable.
Sure. Well, I mean, I think we all can understand that when you have to, you know, you can't just tell the person that's holding you up what you think about, you know, even though there's a couple times here where I felt like Josh really kind of was getting close to crossing the line. But I will say one thing that they've done in showing the Bartlett presidency is that he has a very casual communication with his upper staff. The senior staff, things are, can kind of, they're not scared to kind of make fun of each other and say those kind of things, but they also know when they got to turn that off and it's time to, you know, kind of up the formality and that kind of stuff. Kind of moves us into the next thing, which again, I mean, this episode started a little weird for me because I do feel like the joke in the beginning was a little bit forced. It wasn't bad, but, and then I almost felt like it was out of character for Bartlett to be as hard on the vice president as he was in such an open forum. That whole interaction.
What'd you think of the dressing down of the VP right there?
I was just like, wow.
Is it,
I mean,
cringy or, because this is the first time we've seen both the vice president and president interact together, right?
I believe so, yes.
I mean, this is, yeah.
Everything else had kind of been through Leo or through CJ and all that kind of stuff. So this was, I mean, you even talked about wondering what the backstory was between the vice president and the president.
Yeah, and that's addressed a lot more this episode.
Absolutely. So, but I do think it was kind of cringy. Number one, we almost get a direct quote from A Few Good Men. You know, the whole using of the stenographer or the person taking notes and saying, would you like me to read that back? I mean, that's like directly out of A Few Good Men when he's like, danger? I said grave danger. And you said, is there another kind? I can have the court reporter read back for
right.
you. I was like, wow. You know, and, I mean, just knowing Sorkin's connection there, you know, that was kind of interesting there. But to do it in such a public way, in that, you know, that just didn't, I don't know, it didn't feel necessarily like
Bartlett. I disagree that it was a public way. I mean, it's in a meeting. Much of this episode's
his whole
around
cabinet's
how
there,
did,
though.
Well, how did Danny find out? A lot of this episode's about how did Danny even, you know, learn about this. I'm going to use the term dressing down again. How did he, because it's just his cabinet in there, right? The cabinet and the woman taking notes. That's all who's privy to what's going
right.
on. And they did talk about how they don't have cabinet meetings that often.
Fair enough. Maybe it's not public's the wrong word, but there were a number of people there. And then you have to figure that a cabinet meeting that they don't have very often is should be a little bit more of a formal matter. And just not going to start the thing by just like, I mean, you're right. He gets dressed down. I mean, he just, you know. It wasn't even funny. It wasn't even, you know, there wasn't even, it wasn't like I'm messing with you as a joke.
I think you feel for the people in the room because they're all like, what did we just walk into? I mean, everyone's
it's,
been
it's
in that
totally
situation,
like,
right? Everyone's been like, I didn't know these two people had problems and I'm not a part of this. What's going on?
Either that or they're like, here we go again. These people can't ever even be in a room together. No, it was completely like being at a dinner party with another couple and they start having
right.
a fight while you're there. You're like, hey. Hey, if we need to leave or whatever, this is just awkward. But obviously, I mean, you know how it serves the story as we continue on. And so maybe, you know, I mean, it's early in the series. I guess we're still learning about Bartlett. And then I mean, staying with this whole thing about him, between him and the vice president, it's not even fully explained. I mean, do you feel like you have an understanding of why there's so much tension there?
Not detailed, but you know, when they have the confrontation at the end, it's clear that they had a primary and there's still anger. And the vice president's just like, I'm, you know, I brought you the South, which that's pretty much how picking a VP works, right? You do pick the person who's going to help you the most in the, you know, the national election.
Sure.
So he's, you know, clearly they weren't friends. It was just that both of them made political decisions and they had an ugly primary. Right. So that's what we know.
Yeah, I mean, it'll be fun to watch to see how this continues. Because I feel like it's the storyline is still interesting, even though it was kind of, you know, it was a little out of character, I felt like, for Bartlett there in the beginning. But it's still, I mean, we're starting to see more. I love the fact that it's been a number of episodes since we've dealt with the president and the vice president relationship. But I do feel like the writers do a good job of, you know, kind of drawing us back into these storylines. We're like, oh yeah, I kind of forgot about that. Cause you know, obviously we have a big cast and a lot of ongoing serialized storylines. But this one's good. I want to know, you know, regardless of the execution in the beginning, I want to know what's going on. I want to keep hearing as a character, the vice president. You like the guy, you trust the guy.
I was about to ask you that. Like, I mean, I think it's clear that if you're a cheerleader watching, Bartlett's the one you're cheering for, right? Although you kind of saw some pettiness in that dressing down, and then you learn why later, and the VP kind of maybe needed to learn that his britches were too big. Is that a good term for us to use?
Britches were too big.
You've not heard, you're too big for your britches? You've never heard that?
Well, yes, I'm from the South. I understand that. I just didn't know anybody said
well,
it anymore.
Well, he delivered since the South. He gets the term. The vice president knows now that his britches are too big.
Dan, you've gone round the bend. I mean, that was a little bit of a reach, I feel like. I think they're trying very hard to paint the vice president as this noble character, right? He's very noble in how he interacts with, in previous episodes, dealing with Leo right after his wife, you know, wants to have the divorce, talking Leo into coming to one of his AA meeting, one of his addiction meetings. Even in how they go about this, he doesn't sell out to the story. He totally dismisses it when it comes to the press and everything. They're building this guy up a little too much. It feels like there's something about him that feels like, okay, we just don't know yet. And that's what I, when watching this episode, that's what I was feeling about the VP. What are you thinking about the VP?
I don't know where they're going with the story. I could see him having a big fall. That would make sense. The only real likable time for him was when he was helping Leo, right? When he was compassionate with Leo. Otherwise, he's been kind of a grating character, I think. Not a whole lot of, hey.
Well, I mean, I think watching him get dressed down at the beginning of this episode, you're not disliking him. You're kind of, you know, I wasn't cheering for Bartlett when all that went down.
But you're still thinking he deserves it for some reason. You don't know why.
Sure.
The episode didn't end with Bartlett apologizing to him, you know.
It's true.
And I do think, I did wonder when the vice president, the vice president almost seems to like he had made his apology and was ready to leave the room. And then he turns around and that's when it was like, oh no, you should have just left the room. Just leave the room. How do you think that goes if he just leaves the room and there's not the confrontation at the end? Less interesting story, I guess. I mean, did you need to see the VP kind of like, okay, let me get out what I need to get out? And then the president kind of says, okay, well, I'll let you know too what I think. You know, I'm not cheering for the VP right now.
Yeah, I mean, that was intense. You're right. You should have just watched out. Then you turn around. How many times in your life have you been like, okay, I'm done, and then you're second guessing, you're like, yeah, I'm gonna say this last thing, and that last thing never turns out to go very, very well.
I think I've swallowed hard more than I've turned around and said what I thought. So
your control is impressive to us all, Dan. Obviously, still interested. I don't think we got a little bit of a glimpse to why there's tension there. It has to do with, you know, going all the way back to the campaign, but we still don't know necessarily the absolute details. Another big storyline in this episode revolves around your absolute favorite character, Mr. Sam Seaborn. I am impressed with Rob Lowe doing this role, regardless of what you think about the character, because
he
is stunningly awkward.
Yeah, it's, I mean, just brilliantly. The acting is fantastic.
That's really on display in this episode, just the quirkiness that is Sam. I would love to hear how you feel. I mean, after has anything changed about your opinion of Sam, or are you just solidified in your, this guy needs to, do you feel like he needs to go, or you just dislike him?
No, I don't feel like he needs to go, and I don't dislike him. I've used the term screw up many, many times. He's a screw up. Even with his interaction with Mallory, I'm going, why didn't you say this instead? But like you said, it's that awkwardness that it makes the character enjoyable. The character's enjoyable. Rob Lowe plays it very well, but the character is a bumbling fool sometimes, I think, especially with the social stuff, like you've just, you know, said. I guess because of her wanting him to go to the bar, we knew something was going to happen with him, her and Mallory, or him and Mallory.
Right.
You kind of wonder where the call girl is in all this, because he, you know, wasn't it last episode? It was either the last or two episodes ago. He's having, you know, lunch with her, you know, sharing sandwiches right. and stuff. So that story's got to come back,
eating the microphone
too.
Pickles.
Right. Yeah. Right. So where does this, you know, where do those two stories come together? Because I'm wondering right. if that's, and surely Sam's the perfect character to bungle it when it does come together. So it's almost the anticipation of, the anticipation. Right. They've done a good job. I was laughing a little bit in my head. I was like, oh, I should have been watching this in 1999, because I would have been in college and I would have known that a great line to say to a girl, if you want her interested in you, is, I slept with a call girl last night. And then I realized, I don't look like Rob Lowe. So maybe it's not the line, but right. this arc is interesting and fun to watch. It leads into so much, the interaction with the father too, him sabotaging Sam trying to go that night. Should we go ahead and right. jump into that part of the story? What'd you think of that?
Well, I mean, before we get there, yes, I think that's definitely part of the conversation. Before we get there, I will say this. On screen, there's more chemistry between, for me, there's more chemistry between Sam and Mallory than there is Sam and Lori. There will be people who disagree with that. It is interesting to me, for exactly what you said, you know, her interest in him, right? Because you would think, you know, I guess the cliche is, oh, he's a bad boy. I slept with a call girl. What? No, he's not a bad boy. He's awkward and weird. He's awkward and slept with a call girl. That can't be a mixture that makes, you know, the educator, you know, Leo's daughter Mallory go, hey, come to the opera with me. But
which apparently no one wants to go to either. No one wants to go to the opera.
Right. Well, Mallory does. Mallory was into it. Just none of the fellas, you know, were ready for Monday night opera night. But I don't even think Leo's, I will say this. Do you think Leo was messing with Sam more because he was dating his daughter, or was he messing with his daughter more because he felt like she was holding him hostage about the divorce because of, his job and everything?
I don't know. I mean, when it first happened, I would have said he was being like, ha ha, I'm the dad. I can show this kid what's going on. But by the end of the episode where you have the scene where Bartlett comes in and reads the list of everything that Leo had been doing that day for Mallory, I see the other point. I wouldn't have thought that initially, but by the end of the episode, I see your point about maybe he just needs right. Mallory to know how big of a deal the job is. He does seem to be taking the blame from Mallory for the
sure.
for the divorce, I guess.
No, I mean, without a doubt, we see Mallory's very, very strong-willed. So you can definitely see, even though she was quick to back down from buying the $6.50 cup of coffee.
educator. So she's like, no.
It's true. It's true. I think because of that scene at the end with when Bartlett comes in and all that kind of stuff, I think his main motivation was more about letting Mallory know something than it was about letting Sam. But I will say this, no matter how much chemistry you have, and maybe this is anti-romantic of me or whatever, I don't care how strong the attraction is. This is another colossal bad decision on Sam's part to engage. You don't start dating Leo's daughter. There's no way in the world this goes well.
Well, especially when Tuesday night he's got to go see the call girl. You know, like, he's like, oh, Monday night I was just going to watch football. But good thing you didn't ask me for tomorrow. Real quick, because we brought up the Monday night thing. Was this on ABC?
No, this was NBC.
I'm surprised they're pushing an ABC show. They're like, Monday Night Football, you would have thought this was on ABC, and they were just doing a plug right there.
Well, I think, as we've learned throughout the, in 1999, the only thing you couldn't bring attention to was Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, because that show was killing it.
Right.
So, which I think that was on ABC. So maybe they're just trying to get people to stop watching Regis Philbin give away all the dollars. Anyway, that was interesting. I enjoyed the storyline. I think seeing the interaction between Toby and Sam is very, very good. Toby, we get a very, very self-deprecating Toby, even though he's not predominant in this episode very much at all.
And all the interaction between him and Sam, you know, we've had friction between them before, but now you kind of see them as working together for the common good, even if it's just a birthday card. You know, they both are passionate about what they do.
Right.
Which I guess is what caused the friction before anyway.
Just thinking about that, that's the nicest thing you've ever said to me about a character that, you know, that you think is such a screw up. You know, you drawing that warmth from their kind of collaboration, how they work together. I'm impressed, Dan. That's some deep feels for you.
Yeah, I know.
And it makes me.
Did, I got teary-eyed saying it.
Did you? I'll the little catch in your voice, I'll edit it out once we do the final version. All right. So what else happened? We're still not seeing a lot of Charlie. Love the Charlie character. We got a lot of him in his entry into the kind of the West Wing universe, but we've kind of laid off here, which I think is just a function of the size of the cast. So, I mean, I did like the interaction at the end where it was Charlie's turn to be the Josh and have to listen to all the trivia and all that kind of stuff. But honestly, we really don't get a ton of him.
Yeah, no Charlie going on this episode. Not much at all. He is used to pin Sam down, right?
Right. That's how Leo used him as kind of the messenger to make him do this birthday message. So, yeah. So we did get to use him there. That was still pretty good. Mandy is kind of the only one on the staff that is fighting. Well, she's not. Her and Sam are kind of on this not wanting to give in, not wanting to freak out about the attachment of this land use rider and all that kind of stuff. Whereas Toby and Josh are more really, you know, kind of get their hair kind of bristles up and they really want to fight about this. No, I mean, no real deepening of the Mandy character, though, or anything. I guess it was just nice. It was nice to see her not on a side all by herself. Now she's squarely on the side with the screw-up Sam.
She's picked her.
But she also, she makes good points.
Yeah, I mean, both of their points are, what, that the banking bill is more important than the whole state of Montana?
Right.
Kind of where you get, right?
Well, no. I don't think it's the whole state of Montana. All right? I mean, let's be careful. Those seven people will be upset with us. I'm sure there's plenty of wonderful people in Montana. This specifically is the environmental impact that this will have in Montana. I guess the argument there is that it's not even visited by a lot of people. Yes, it's beautiful, but not a lot of people show up there anyway. So we're willing to make this compromise to do what we need to do with the banking lobby. So, or specifically with the banking bill.
So the argument of the greater good is worth the small sacrifice we're making. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's funny too, because in kind of researching this, I did find out that the actual resolution that Josh comes up with is. And I will say, I felt like this was written well, because what I thought was just a throwaway joke in the beginning with Bartlett and all his, you know, national park, you know, trivia and all that kind of stuff, really kind of comes full circle at the end when Josh discovers that through the Antiquities Act, he can designate it as a national park.
Which brings me back to, why didn't you ever like, I mean, Josh pulling through in the clutch here. He's like, give me time. Now you got Josh pulling
first
through.
Of all, you're wrong. Second of all, shut up. I turned around on Josh a while ago. I said in the first episode was when I was kind of like, he graded me a little different. Even though both he and Toby kind of come off as brash, he was a little more bombastic, whereas Toby's a little more self-deprecating, which I like. So, but I turned around on him a long time ago.
I got you convinced on Josh. You're still working on me on Sam.
I am. Well, I mean, I can't argue with you. Sam is a screw-up. okay, but I did, in doing research, I did find out that the president in real life, the president has the ability to designate anything a national monument. To designate something a national park, that does have to be an act of Congress. So I thought that was interesting. I mean, I don't care that they use that in the story and it turns out it's not really true. That to me, that kind of stuff doesn't, you know, it's a great part of the story. It was a great way to tie in something that I felt like was unrelated and bring it kind of full circle.
I don't think they were just trying to get Paul Cy Majors to watch the show. So they can have some liberties when it comes to actual policy and stuff like that.
Sure.
Or procedures, whatever, what have you.
Right. Okay, what about we get a little bit more of the flirtatious CJ and Danny interaction? How we feeling about Danny as a character? He's kind of popping up there to be more than just kind of one of these reporters we run into every once in a while.
Yeah, he's got the popularity with the people who work there. They have that scene, you know, you like to say walk and talk, or that's what it's called, or whatever, where he walks in. She's like, "How did you get back here?" And he says to the group, "Anyone mind I'm here?" And you know, no one seems to care. But then they have their conversation, and then when they're leaving, CJ says, "Say goodbye to Danny." He knows it's time for him to leave. I think we're liking Danny, because I think we see that he's playing fair, right? And even
100%.
Even Mandy, CJ goes to Mandy to get, like, what can I give him that'll keep him from running the story?
Right.
And Mandy doesn't say, "Oh, don't trust him. He's, you know, he'll do whatever he can as a journalist." No, she says, "Give him 30 minutes," and that's exactly what he wanted. And he said he didn't feel like his source should be fired. He says to CJ, "If you fire somebody, I'm running the story." Or he says, "I'll say why." Right. You know, kind of like the deal's off if this person gets fired, right?
Sure. Wait, I found that interesting, because CJ still goes to the president and is like, "What do you want to do about this?"
And he didn't care. He's like, well, whatever. That's the source. Which is a little surprising. I think maybe it's like, well, we're not going to fire her.
He kind of got his punkness out on the vice president. He's all trying to make up for it and be nice to people now.
Right. Well, I think it's one of those things where you just know that, okay, we don't put that person, we don't give them that important job again. They get a different.
Right. Yeah. All of a sudden they're taking minutes at the Department of Transportation meeting, not the cabinet meeting. Yeah.
But so I'll bring this. Do you like Danny? I like Danny. He likes CJ.
Oh, I very much like Danny.
He's cute in his flirtatious way, you know. He's completely appropriate with the ways flirting. CJ, even when they...
Do you feel like the White House press secretary, it would be appropriate for the White House press secretary to date a reporter?
No, not at all. But, you know, for television, sure. This is fun. It's completely inappropriate, but we're going to let that ride because, you know... We want to keep watching the show.
Well, I mean, and to be honest, in the show, that's what she pretty much says that to Danny in this episode. I can't go out. I can't do dinner. I can't do a movie. Whichever one it is, she's like, "I can't do that with you."
No, that's not what she said. I felt it was like kind of like, "I'm too busy. I can't go to dinner." Not, "I can't do it with you." But maybe I read that wrong.
No, I definitely think she's trying to make him, without saying it, she's trying to make him understand, you know, why she's, you know. Because let's be honest, she flirts back.
Right.
I mean, maybe there's something to the whole acting exasperated all the time by him, which is you know, kind of maybe a, I don't know, maybe not. What do I know? I've been married 24 years.
But we're liking Danny. We want to see. And I think we like Danny because he seems like he's a straight shooter, even though he's still trying to get the scoop.
Right. Genuine guy.
Yeah.
Was totally willing to drop the whole VP story and all that kind of stuff. So, yeah.
Well, yeah, he gets 30-minute sit-down with the president. Yeah, that's huge, right?
Well, I guess it depends on the president.
Well, I was kind of surprised that Bartlett was just like, "Oh, yeah, I'll do that." I guess that shows how much Bartlett didn't want it out that there was a rift between him and the vice president. So.
Okay, so on a little bit of a more serious note, I do find the line at the end, toward the end of the episode, when Josh has come into the Oval Office. He's told the president, you know, about the Antiquities Act and all that kind of stuff. And then you feel like they're done. And Bartlett goes to walk to the residence, and Josh follows them outside and says, "We talk about enemies a lot more than we used to." That was an interesting line to me. What is Josh trying to communicate to the president when he says, "We talk about enemies a lot more than we used to"?
I don't know. I feel like he's just taking in, like, absorbing the responsibility now that not on a campaign anymore. This is actual them being the president and staff. And maybe not liking the reality of what that power entails. That's what I kind of thought. It's kind of weird coming from Josh, because Josh has already had his interactions, his fling saying, oh, you're in the game now. But here, Josh is definitely in the game. And does he not like that he figured out a way to get around this and to put it on the, I think it was Congressman who slid the bill in, or the attachment, or whatever it was called.
To me, I think, and it, obviously I'm looking at it from the perspective of 2021, and you know, and you can't, I don't know how to watch this and not pretend like I'm living in 2021 right now. But to me, it was almost a comment of just, number one, the growing polarization that was happening politically to the country, and the fact that instead of doing what they want to do, they're more reacting to what other people are doing. I mean, it was kind of the running joke of the episode where they kept telling Josh, you're not even outdoorsy. You don't care about the outdoors. You don't care about this land that they're going to strip mine. You know, that's the point they were driving home, was that Josh wasn't offended by what they were going to do with this rider they put on this bill, as much as who put it on and what that said to what they thought about them politically. And it was almost like he was completely just, this was just reactionary. Oh, you're going to do that. It doesn't matter what you're doing, but the fact that you're doing it, I'm going to fly against it. I don't know. It was very telling that he kind of said that at the end, where it almost felt to me like he was trying to tell the president, we can't be about just screwing the other guy. We got to be about what we believe in. To me, that's what I, in my little idealistic world, that's what I'm drawing from the comment of saying, let's be for something, and not, let's be more about being for things, less about being against things. Like I say, that might be a little too lollipops and cotton candy.
Well, I think it is. And I'll tell you why. I feel like they talk about Dems.
Wait a minute. What do you mean? You think it is? You think it's lollipops and cotton candy?
Well, I think it's more lollipops and cotton candy. But I feel like they talk about Dems and Republicans a lot. And of course, the Democratic side would be more fighting for the environment, right?
Right.
So a lot of the episode they talked about, this isn't worth fighting for because we don't get enough back from the environmentalists. That's the way I took it. They're like, well, let this go because the banking thing's more important. Whereas if you're really just fighting what you believe, then they would be totally fighting against this add-on to the banking bill. But I do think there's a theme in this episode of vengeful men keeping tabs.
Yeah.
So maybe that's where he is more. I mean, I get your point that in Josh's character's heart, he probably doesn't care so much about the add-on. But I think this is another example of Bartlett still holding something against the vice president. Vice president still holds something against Bartlett. You've got Leo, who can't decide, you know, if he wants Sam to go on a date or not. And right. It's like they're all just keeping up and putting little marks next to people's names of who they're going to get, or who they like, or who they don't like.
Right. Well, I mean, Bartlett, at one point, when he finds out about the land use rider, he actually says this line. And I think this is very telling with what you're talking about right here. He says, I don't like these people, CJ, and I don't want to lose. And like, I mean, at no point is he referencing, I don't want to do this to Big Sky. I don't want to do this to Montana. I don't, you know, we can't do this to the, I mean, you're absolutely right. I mean, this is more about scorekeeping and who's wearing what color jersey than it is about the actual issue.
Yeah. So let's see where it goes from here. I'm kind of wondering. This episode, I definitely feel like kept a lot of stories we already had going. That's all I have.
Yeah. So, I mean, we've got the shipping of Sam and Mallory. We still have no idea what's happening with the Happy Hooker.
Call girl. Gosh, Michael. Come on. Call girl.
I mean, at $3,000, I guess it's an important designation. You know, the whole Danny CJ thing kind of going on. You know, that's, even though the stress between the VP and the president, even though it feels like we turn a little bit of a corner as they're able to kind of air their, even though we don't know the actual details. I don't know. Yeah, there's a lot of stuff going on. And here we are, you know, just on the front part of the halfway mark of season one. So, pretty good stuff. You got anything else for the filibuster?
No, I'm done with that. Yeah, I'm good.
All right, so we'll move on to our next segment, which is the caucus. This is where we get to vote on whether we like the episode or not. We have three choices. We can vote yay, we really liked it. We can vote, we can abstain because we're or we can nay, just not real happy with it. So, Dan, the gentleman from the state of Dan, I'll let you vote first. What say ye?
Oh, I'm a hard abstain on this one.
Hard abstain? Hard almost abstain. Almost an A?
I just, no, more just, I understand it's used to progress stories, but nothing, yeah, I'm just hard, I don't know really how to explain it. I just, you get done with this episode and you're like, okay, now I'm ready for the next one because I need this story to continue. It's done a good job progressing, but it's not like one of those, oh, that was a really good episode, like right. I've seen before. I think the last episode was much, much better. I'm just staying out of this one. I'm abstaining. Sure. Now, Michael, you've set a trend here with your vote. What are you going with?
And in the spirit of what Josh talked about, I'm not going to just make my decision based on what you voted. I've made my decision from after I got done watching it for this rewatch. And I said, you know what? This is my first episode that I'm abstaining as well. And here's the reason. It's not a bad episode. I mean, and we obviously our whole filibuster, we kind of talked about some of the redeeming qualities and interesting points. You're right. What doesn't really happen, though, is I don't know that I've learned anything new about any of the characters. Maybe the vice president, but I don't know that I'm counting him as one of the major players anyway. Right.
Well, that's why I was going to say the vice president. I feel like you learned a lot about. I don't know what goes on from here, but
sure.
But everyone else, yeah, I agree.
Everyone else is kind of, it's an extension of what we already know about them. And so, I'm not upset that I watched the episode or anything like that, but we slowed a little bit. Part of that is that there were so many storylines in this episode. I think sometimes we get a little watered down. I think we got to be careful. I say we like I'm a part of the industry. I think television has to be careful when they have so many strings happening that nothing really happens in an episode because there were so many little plots. And that's kind of where I landed with this one. So, but we're both abstaining. We're both, on the golf course while everybody else is in their chambers voting or however all that stuff works. The scarier thought here is that we've agreed. I think we've agreed on everything but one episode, which is just not
how things normally. I've definitely abstained and, I've abstained and voted nay before, so it's definitely two.
Okay, that's right, because I've been a yay all the way up until this point.
Right.
So
you're finally breaking some trends here. All right.
I am. It was that rubber stamp. It was that rubber stamp comment last episode that really made me look inward and define what am I going to be about. And that was the caucus. And then our final segment in our podcast is On the Record. You might have noticed throughout the episode, I've been trying to put little quotes from the episode into our normal conversation. Dan tries to catch me in those. Dan, I'll tell you that I had a pretty long list, but I was only able to get three quotes into this conversation.
Oh, so, I got all three. I got all
three. Oh, did you really?
I think so.
All right, that'll be impressive. Let's. What quotes did you catch?
Okay, first I'll do the ones. Two I definitely know I got. The other one I think I got. And this could go back into our earlier thing because I actually want to talk about it just a little bit more. Nicest thing you ever said to me was said by Sam.
Yes.
And he said that to Mallory with...
When she insinuated that he was exactly like Leo, yeah.
Yeah, but Leo was actually there. So Leo got to feel the compliment too, that number one, Sam has so much respect for Leo. And...
But also his daughter. I mean, his daughter, saying that about someone she likes, I think that's also a little love.
But she wasn't really saying it as a compliment at the time, though, right? Well, she's kind of like, you're just like him, right? Like, oh, it's got to be perfect. It's got to be just right.
And, right. I guess she had just stormed into his office. And I don't know that you get that. Even if you're the daughter, do you get to storm into the chief of staff's office and call him Machiavellian and don't hate baby me and all that kind of stuff? I was like, hey, whoa. Might need to save that for the house.
Well, he's never at the house, according to this show. They all just work until 11 p.m. They show up
that's
in the morning.
Right.
The shut up, or wrong, said by CJ talking to Danny, right?
That's right. First of all, you're wrong. Second of all, shut up when he's, he's flirting with her, trying to get, talking about trying to go out and all that kind of stuff. He says something nice about her legs. And it was like, yeah, you got to be careful with that stuff, buddy.
And then around the bend, was that the third
one? Yes, you've gone around the bend.
Okay, I think it was Mallory. I'm not sure. I'm not sure where that quote was.
Mallory says that to Leo.
Okay, it was Mallory. She said, okay, yeah, you've gone completely around the bend. Okay.
When they're at breakfast, she, in response to him talking about something. She goes, Dad, you've gone round the bend.
Yeah, because that's the big thing where, like, you can call your ex-wife, you know, you can talk to her.
Sure, exactly.
I'm not going to be the intermediary between the two of you. But, yeah, so I got all three. That was good. Yeah, you did pretty well.
What else did you said you wanted to talk about one other thing?
No, I did. The point about nicest thing you ever said to me, I thought the only reason I didn't bring it up is because it was one of the quotes. So
other quotes that I liked were Toby saying to Sam, right away, you're starting off bad. I mean, that is Toby to a T. No pun intended, I guess. I like that line. Also, and I struggled with putting this down because I'm not a fan of the Mandy character, so I'm not really excited about quoting her, but this was a good quote. When she looks at Josh and she says, you're fighting the wrong fights and you're doing it for the wrong reasons, which I think is an extension. I mean, I think that's the catalyst for him saying what he says when he walks out on the portico and says, you know, we talk about enemies more. It's just along the same vein there. So I liked both of those. All right. Not the best episode, but I still think it was pretty good discussion. Still excited about the season. Want to see where things are going. Hopefully you're enjoying the West Wing season one as well. Our next episode will be over season one, episode 9. So if you're watching along with us, make sure you see it before we release our episodes released every Tuesday. You can see that you should have a new one on a weekly basis. Thanks so much for being with us and helping us prove that hindsight's not always 20/20. This is Rerun Retrospect.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of Rerun Retrospect. If you'd like to connect with us, you may email us at rerunretrospect@gmail.com or follow us on Twitter at @rerunretrospect. We hope you'll join us for our next episode where we keep pulling big ideas off the small screen.